We're holding on Samachtes Amud Aleph, about halfway down the Amud, through the third line of the wide lines. We were learning yesterday about we started learning about the Ben Soda the murder. We talked about that since the Pasuk says Ben, then it means that he has to be not old enough to be an Ish, but he has to be close to being an Ish. And we said also that if he himself is or could be an Av, a father, then also he can't become a Ben Sarah murder, from which we said, therefore, so we were discussing the question, would it be possible for him to father a child even before Bar Mitzvah, such that the child is born before he reaches the stage of Hakafas Zokan, where we said where enough hair grows in around his Aver, to make him that he's no longer in the category of Ben Sarah murder. So the last thing we said was that not necessarily, what we mean is, in other words, all we need is enough time that potentially if he had a wife and if she was pregnant, then it would be noticeable by that point, which is 3 months into the pregnancy. So it doesn't require that the baby is actually born, that the hypothetical baby is born before he's out of the stage of Ben Sarah murder, but at least that the pregnancy is noticeable at that point. So the Gemara says Gufa. So getting back to what we said before, Amud of Krus V'Doi, Amud of Shamsi, Kol Yom of Shaben Sarah Murder, and an Alashloisha Chadoshim Bovad. So the whole period during which a boy could be a Ben Sarah Murder is only 3 months. So the Gemara says V'Hanan Tnan Mishi Yovish Shtei Sidus V'Ad Sheyakif Zokon. The Mishnah had said from when he develops Shtei Sidus until there's enough hair there that it surrounds the Aver. And that presumably takes a lot more than 3 months. And the answer is, the Mishnah is telling us it's one or the other. Hikif zokon afagav v'leimolo shloisha chadoshim. If enough hair grows there, it grows much faster than normal, and therefore enough hair has grown, even though the 3 months have not passed yet, then he can't be a ben sarah murderer. And Rabbi Christopher Dori is telling us, molo shloisha chadoshim afagav v'leihikif. Then, in addition, you also have a hard limit of 3 months, whether hikif zokon or not, on the basis of we were saying that 3 months is enough, that if his wife were pregnant, that the pregnancy would be noticeable by that point. So it's one or the other. Christopher Dori is not contradicting the Mishnah. Rather, each of them is saying a different criterion, and in order for him to be a Ben Sarah murder, it has to be that neither of them, neither Hikif Zokon, nor that 3 months have passed since Shtei Sidus. The Gemara continues. Yosef Reb Yaakov Minahav Kud Kamei Derava. Reb Yaakov from Nahar Pekud, the name of a city in Bavel, was sitting one time in front of Ravina as a Talmud. The Yosef Akama Meshmed Rav Huna Breder Yeshua. He was sitting and saying the following concept in the name of Rav Huna Breder Yeshua. He says, Shema Mina Mid Rav Krus V'Doi, based on what Reb Krus V'Doi is saying, we can derive the following point. We can derive Yeledes L'Shiva. Now, we have throughout Shas, we talk about the idea that a baby can develop on one of two tracks, either a 7 month track or a 9 month track. Meaning, most babies develop on the 9 month track, and it takes 9 months for the baby to gestate in the womb and to be viable. But sometimes you have babies who are born after a 7 month period, and that kind of thing. Also, we have various great figures in Jewish history, such as Moshe Rabbeinu and Shmuel, who were born like that after a short pregnancy like that. There is that concept. So now, Rabbi Yaakov and Ahav Pekud is pointing out, we can see from this din that we just said, Yeledes L'Shiva Ein Ubra Nikar L'Shlish Yameha. If a woman is to give birth after a 7 month pregnancy, the pregnancy would not be noticeable after one third of the pregnancy. Meaning, in other words, we were saying before that you need 3 months for the pregnancy to be noticeable. Evidently, Rabbi Yaakov is saying that must apply whether the pregnancy is a 7 month pregnancy or a 9 month one. Either way, it still takes 3 months for it to be visible. Rather than saying that the amount of time is one third of the pregnancy, we would have to say that it's always a fixed 3 months. If you were going to say that you could notice the pregnancy after one third of it is over, Then Lomalik Gimel, then why would we say that you have a 3-month window in which it could be a Ben Soramoda? The Treva Tilta Saga, on the face of it, according to that, it would be enough if there were 2 months and 1/3 of a month, because that would be 1/3 of 7 months. And yet, Reb Kruse Vidoya is telling us that the window of time during which a boy could be a Ben Soramoda is not 2 1/3 months, but rather 3. So therefore, says Reb Yaakov, we must say on the basis of that, that no matter what, whether it's going to end up being a 7-month pregnancy or a 9-month one, either way, when the pregnancy is noticeable, is always after 3 months, and therefore, that's why we're saying you have a 3-month window of opportunity during which he's already bar mitzvah, so therefore he already has shei sidus. Therefore, as we talked about yesterday, he can be chayiv misa, where otherwise, as a child, he wouldn't be chayiv misa, and yet he still can't be considered an av yet, because the pregnancy would not be noticeable. Otherwise, in other words, again, the point is, sometimes you have pregnancies like that, that are shorter, and we should say that the baby develops faster and the pregnancy is noticeable after only 2 months and 1/3. Amalei, but Ravina answers, and that's not really a solid proof. La'olam emalach ubra nikol shlisha meha. You could actually say that maybe the baby is noticeable after only 1/3 of the pregnancy is over, regardless of whether it's a 7 or 9 month pregnancy. So yes, it will. The amount of time will vary depending on the length of the pregnancy. All it is, but zil bosa ruba, but we can go according to the majority. Most pregnancies are 9 months, so therefore we don't have to be concerned about the possibility that this particular one might actually be a 7-month pregnancy. Rashi, by the way, points out another nafkamina from this question. This question of what Rabbi Yaakov is pointing out is not just relevant as far as the ben sotah murder, it's also relevant as far as the question of, for example, we say that if a woman after her husband dies or divorces her or what have you, and she's supposed to wait 3 months, minimum of 3 months, before she remarries. That way, we can tell whether the baby is from her first husband or her second one. So now, if you're going to tell me. So now all we have to do is take a look. Is the pregnancy noticeable after 2 1/3 months? If so, then we know that it's a 7-month pregnancy, and then we can be sure it's from the first husband, and then we don't have a suffix. So Ravina is answering him, no, that's not really a solid proof, because you could say zil bosa ruba, you go according to the majority, and most pregnancies are 9 months, and therefore, so no, you can't really say that it could happen that it could be less than that. No, when it comes to the Ben Soramoda here, we're just going to say that we're always saying a flat 3 months. So, in fact, the Oroch Haner points out over here that the Gemara does point out that sometimes you also have pregnancies that are not noticeable after 1/3 of the time. So, and then precisely for that reason, the Gemara mentions in Yevamos that sometimes we can have that kind of suffix. So the same way over here, we can say that we go according to the Ruv, and most women give birth after 9 months. So, Amrua Kameh de Rav Yeshua, de Rav Huna Bre de Rav Yeshua. So in fact, the Yad Ramah points out, it is true that if it were to be that his wife or a woman he had relations with had a noticeable pregnancy after 2 1/3 months, we couldn't judge him as a Ben Soramoda anymore. But on the whole, we can assume that 3 months, it would have been 3 months. So Amrur Kamei de Rav Yeshua to Rav Huna Bre de Rav Yeshua. They told over this discussion to Rav Huna Bre de Rav Yeshua, and he says, Omalahu, he says, wait a minute, over Dinin Afoshas mi as Linen Basar Ruga, since when by Dinin Afoshas do we go according to a Roiv? Doesn't the Torah tell us that the Beis Din has to judge him and try to save him, as we learned earlier in the Masechta about the length that Beis Din has to go to try to find reasons to exonerate him? You're telling me we just go according to the drive? Why? Why couldn't there be a valid argument in Beis Din? It's already 2 1/3 months to pass. There's still 20 days left to go until the third month is over. Why wouldn't it be a valid argument in Beis Din? That in fact, maybe in this case, maybe had he been, maybe a hypothetical woman that he would have been with would be pregnant by now and would be noticeable after 2 1/3 months, and therefore we shouldn't judge him as a Ben Soder murder. How can we ignore that factor and just say, well, most of the time it's 3 months? So what do you mean? Zilbasa Ruba. They brought back the case to Ravina. They brought back the Rav Huna Brei de Rishu's answer to Ravina. Omalei, and Ravina answers back. So over Dinin Afrashas lawyers learn in Basa Ruba. So what's the problem? You're telling me by Dinin Afrashas we don't go according to Rav? But none. We learned earlier in our Masechta, Echad Oimer B'Shnayim B'Chodesh, that we said if one aid says that the thing happened on the second day of the month, the Echad Oimer B'Shloisha, and the other one says it happened on the third day, Adrusim Kayemis, their Adrus is still valid. They're contradicting each other, and we learned earlier that if they contradict each other, we throw out the Adrus. We said, one of them knows that the previous month was 30 days long, and the other one doesn't know that. So we see that in a case, and we accept their Adrus. Tosfos points out earlier in the Masechta, Tosfos refers over here to what they discussed earlier in the Masechta on the subject when we learned that point, that one thing is, we have to remember, you know, we also asked them the day of the week, we also asked them all the other details. Everything matched up with the exception of the day of the month, therefore we have reason to say that they're not actually contradicting each other, but just one of them has information that the other one doesn't know. Nevertheless, Tosfos says, the Gemara is still asking over here, that if we didn't go according to the Rav, then it would be an example of what we learned, Kivin Shehigid, Shuvei Nechozer Magid, that once an Eid has said Eidus, we don't allow him to modify his Eidus in a way that's going to contradict or that's going to whatever it. So in other words, so the question is, so obviously we must be able to go according to Rav rather than saying, well, no, maybe they just didn't know, and then afterwards they're explaining that they didn't know, because if that's the case, it would be Shuvei Nechozer or Magid, it would be that they're modifying their Adrus, and they can't do that. So we must say that even in Dinei Nefashos, we go according to Rav. Because most people, it's true, most people are not familiar with that early in the month, whether the previous month was 29 days or 30. So Ravina says, if you were going to tell me, Rav Huna Brei de Reshua, we never go according to the Rav when it comes to Dinei Nefashos, Nema, then why would we accept the Raiders? Nema, Hani, Dafkam, Kamasadi, maybe in fact each one is being precise. One is saying exactly it was on the second, and I know that for a fact. And the other one is saying, I know for a fact that it was on the third. And it comes out then they're contradicting one another. And yet we don't say that. Ela lav mishum damin and zilbos aruba. Therefore, Ravina says, you see very well that when it comes to even to Dinei Nefashos, we do say we go according to the Rav. Veruba de Inchi Avidi de Tobi Ibura de Yarcha. And it's very common that many people, maybe even most people, make a mistake as far as Ibura Chodesh and don't know whether it was a 29-day or a 30-day month. So therefore, so Ravina says there's good reason to say that we do go according to the Rav. In fact, the Gemara is going to go on with the discussion and prove that by Dinei Nefashos we do go according to the Rav, but actually the Ran brings up a question anyway. Wait a minute. I mean, the whole concept that we follow the Rav comes from the dinim of how the Sanhedrin works, that we go according to the majority of, votes. So all it is, fine, you have to have the Tzilua Eder, you have to have some of the Dayanim have to be trying to defend him, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. If all of them start by saying he's guilty, then we let him go free. But the concept of Rav itself, we're learning from the way that a Beis Din votes. So what are you telling me? What is the Huna Brei de Reshu even thinking, that you can't use Rav when it comes to Dinei Nefashos? So the answer is that he and you have other proofs as well. You have other proofs as well that you can go according to Roy when it comes to Dinei Nefashos, as a Gemara, the relevant Gemara in Chulin, is that one person kills another one. How do you know that the victim was not a trefa already? How do you know that he didn't have a hole in his lung in the exact same place where the other guy stabbed him, for example? And then if we knew that that were the case, he wouldn't be chayav misa. And the Gemara, in fact, fact in the Cholim proves from that that we do follow the concept of Roiv and Halacha. So what is the Rehuna Bered of Yeshua's Haba Amina to think that we shouldn't? So the distinction the Ran points out, and actually Tosfos points out similarly at the beginning of our Masechta, that in Halacha we have two different types of Roiv. I think we've discussed this before. You have what's called Ruba de Isei Kamon, which is a Roiv that's in front of us. We have in front of us X number of Dayonim, for example, and some of them are voting this way and some of them are voting that way. Or you have, for example, let's say you have one piece of Treif meat gets mixed up with a few pieces of kosher meat, and then you have it's Ruba de Isei Kamon, we have the Roiv in front of us right now, and the Roiv is kosher. Then you have Ruba de Lesser Kamon, which means we don't have the Roiv in front of us, it's more of a statistical Roiv. Statistically, most women give birth after 9 months, and the pregnancy is noticeable after 3. Statistically, other examples like that. So that kind of here, what Rav Huna Breger Rishu is asking is that how can we use Ruba de Lesser Kamon, which is a weaker type of Roiv, how can we use that when it comes to Dini Nefashis? Sure, Ruba de Isei Kamon, such as we have X number of Dayanim in front of us and they're voting one way or the other, of course the Torah is making it clear that we can use that. But how do we know that we can also use Ruba de Lesser Kamon, a statistical Roiv, to say, for example, well, most women give birth after 9 months, and therefore that's reason enough for us to say that in this case also we can judge him as a ben sora remoto for 3 months. How can we do that? So Ravina was pointing out that when it comes to the two Edim, it's a Ruba de Lesse Kamon, because we don't know, we haven't gone and interviewed everybody to find out how many of them know about that it was a 30-day month or not. It's a Ruba de Lesse Kamon, it's a statistical Roiv, and we see, therefore, that we can use that. So now the Gemara continues, Omer Rav Yumi Yumi Difti Afanan Nami Tanena. Rav Yumi Yumi Difti says, in fact, we have another Mishnah that's relevant to this, a Mishnah in Nidah, which we also learned about earlier in our Masechta. Bas Sholosh Shonim V'yem Echad, a girl, once she's 3 years old and 1 day, meaning full 3 years old, Miskadeshes B'Biyah, she's able to be Mekudesh with her father's permission with Biyah. You know, we know you have Kesef Shtar and Biyah. Below 3, it's not considered bia, but from 3 years old and on, such a thing is possible. It does have validity in halacha, and therefore the kedushin has been accomplished. The bala yovam kna, and similarly, if she had been when she was still a katana, she became her husband died and yibum was needed. If her yovam has relations with her at that point, then yibum has been accomplished, and now therefore she's fully his wife insofar as he would need to give her a get. So that applies as well. And if anybody were to be mizana with her, then he would be chayev for an eshes ish. She would be potter on the grounds that she's a ktana, but the boil would be chayev because she is an eshes ish. So now the Yad Ramah points out she won't have the din of a Naira B'sula, for example, because she's already a Nesua, but nevertheless the dinim of Eishas Ish still apply, and there would be Chenek involved over here. Tosfos actually earlier in the Masechta when we first learned this piece, Tosfos had discussed over there, given that we're saying that a father can accept kedushin and via works and yibum works and all of that, why do we even need to mention the point that chayev aleihem mishum eishes ish? So Tosfos discusses a number of possibilities, one of them being you shouldn't think that maybe it means that he was only koina her midrabbanon, like if a cotton did yibum, and therefore we need to say that it's daraisa. Another point is also that here we're dealing with the matter of Roiv. The point is, even though there is the possibility that when she grows up it's going to turn out that she's an Ilonis, a woman who's infertile, and at 3 years old, we can't know that yet. Nevertheless, we still assume that it was a valid kedushin, and that we're not going to say that it may have been kedushin tos. So somebody was mizana with her, we're able to execute him on that basis, even though there is the possibility, and again, it's a ruba de lesser kamon, because we don't know yet what it's going to be with her, that she may turn out years later that she is an Ilonis. Nevertheless, we don't take that into consideration. So, the Mishnah continues. If somebody has relations with her when she's a nida, then the man who had relations with her becomes tamei, to the extent where something that we're a lower mattress, for example, if you have a pile of mattresses that he lies on, then the ones below, the ones that are not, that he's not lying directly on, the ones that are stacked underneath it, become tamei as a rishon l'tumah to the extent of ke'elyon, like something above a zav, as we learned back when we learned on Nun Hayom and Beis, when we learned this Mishnah and discussed it. A zav sleeps even on a stack of mattresses, all of them are going to be a rishon l'tumah. Here, a boil nidah becomes tamei, but not to the extent of the nidah herself, but rather a lesser degree of tumah, based on, we learn it from the way the Torah phrases it in Parshas Metzora, that he is tamei, but only to the extent that the actual direct mattress that he lies on will become tumas midras and will be an ava tumah, but anything else below that will be only a rishon l'tumah. And that's the same way as when you have a zav is lying on a bed, for example, and you have, let's say, a shelf above him, the things on that shelf are going to become a rishon l'tumah. It's called tumas madaf. So the same way over here, in other words, to saying that the tamei mishkaf tachton ke'elyon is a shorthand way of saying that all the other mattresses in the pile below the one that he's lying on directly are going to become a rishon l'tumah. Again, the point being, in other words, if he was less than 3 years old, then it wouldn't be considered bia in halacha, and therefore he wouldn't have the special din of boil nidah, he would just have more the din of a man who touches a woman who's nidah. It is possible for a girl to become nidah even far below the age of bas mitzvah. The Mishnah mentions in the Sefer Nidah that even if she has uterine bleeding on the very first day she was born, she can become a nidah already. So a nidah is possible for her to be with occasional with a one-off bleeding like that, or whatever, but nevertheless, if she's below 3, then him being boil her is not considered a boil nidah, whereas if she's above three, then it is. And the Mishnah continues, Nisus l'koyin, if she was a Bat Yisrael married to a koyin, toichal b'truma, then she's able to eat truma as the wife of a koyin. Midaraisa, even after Erisin, Midarabonon only after Nisuin, Bala Achamin Apsulin, and if one of the people who passels her, such as a Mamzer or a Goy or an Eved or whatever, has relations with her, Cholol would be another example, Psalam in Akorna, then he passels her from ever marrying a Koyin, because now she's a Cholola, he also passels her from eating Truma ever again. And if any one of the arayas listed in the Torah has relations with her, which includes not only when she's an Esh Ish, we can talk about also when she's a single girl and one of her relatives has relations with her, they would get executed for having relations with her, because again, after 3, it is considered Bia already. She's Potter because she's a Ktana. The point is, in other words, so that thus far the Mishnah. So now, says Rabbi Yirmiyah Midifti, Ba'amai, now why would we say that anybody could be executed for having relations with her as an Eishes Ish? Let's focus on the part of the Mishnah that said that if she's an Eishes Ish, then it's a full-fledged marriage. Why? Ema Ilonisi. It could turn out in the end that she's an Ilonis. She's a woman whose body never physically matures. And it would turn out it was Kiddush Hitos. V'adaita d'hochi l'kaddish. And we would say her husband never would have been Makadish her if he had known that this is going to happen. And therefore it would come out that's Kiddush Hitos. And therefore retroactively we would say there's no Kiddushin. So how can we say now that we should go and execute somebody for being Mizana with her, where it might be that she wasn't an Eishes Ish after all? So it must be because we go according to the roiv. The roiv noshim la milonis ninu. And most women do not turn out to be ilonis, so therefore that shows that we can go according to a roiv. And again, we're talking about even ruba de lesse come on, because we're not talking about that we actually check this girl and know for a fact that she's going to turn out not to be an ilonis. We have no way of knowing that. We're talking about a statistical roiv. And yet we see that that's good enough by din and nefashis. So the Gemara says, no, that's not really a solid proof. Loi, my chayev aler de katani, korban. Because you could say, when we say somebody is chayev for her, doesn't mean he's chayev misa, would mean that he's chayev a korban. B'shoygen. So B'shoygen, when it comes to a korban, then we can go according to the roiv. But to say that we should execute because of a roiv, that, as Rav Huna Breda B'shoa said before, maybe we can't do that. The Gemara says, what do you mean? V'homu mosen al yod ha-chatani. What do you mean? The Mishnah had said that they can be executed because of her. Which means, in other words, we're talking about she's a full-fledged Eish HaZish. And the answer is, v'bala al-viha. Because it means, that part of the Mishnah means that it's her father or some other close relative had relations with her, so then it has nothing to do with her being an Eishasish or not, just by virtue of the fact that she's his daughter, then already he's Chayim Nisa. So that's what we're talking about there. It doesn't matter, Roiv or not Roiv, because it's not a matter of Eishasish, there it's a matter of Arayas. By the way, that Gemara in Chulin actually does mention the point that we do, the point the Gemara mentions over there, the point that we can also follow Chazaka when it comes to Dinin Nefashis, and there we have an example of that, is the Chazaka that he really is her father. After all, how can you know 100% for sure that a certain man is a certain other person's father? Maybe, conceivably, the mother, sure, because there can be people present over there, the midwife and whoever, when she gives birth, the father, you don't really have a way to do that, but Chazaka tells us that we could. The Gemara points out over there, we see that, for example, in last week's parasha, a person can be executed by Beis Din for cursing or hitting his parents, even though when it comes to his father, you could never know 100% for sure that he really is his father. Nevertheless, Chazaka allows us to say that he is. The same way over here, we would say the Chazaka is strong enough to say that he really is her father, and therefore that he can be executed for committing Znus with her. What is still the Gemara says, but the Mishnah had used the expression that if any one of the Arayas had relations with her. Now that implies, in other words, Arayas that come as a result of marriage. So for example, her father, her brother, that's independent of marriage. But let's say, for example, it also seems to include, for example, her father-in-law or her husband's son from a different wife, her stepson, all those kinds of things, they're also be chayim nisa, and those are as a result of the marriage. So that shows, in other words, we have to consider that the marriage is most likely valid. She could turn out to be an ilonis. Well, there you go. It shows that we can use a roiv. The Gemara says, fine, Ella Hocha Mayaskinen, the Kabla Ilave. No, because fine, what we can be talking about is the husband says to begin with, I'm willing to accept that I'm Makadisher, whether it turns out that she's an Ilonis or not. In a regular case, a man would say, you know what, if I had known that she's going to turn out to be an Ilonis, then I wouldn't have married her. But you can have a case where he says, you know what, it doesn't matter, either way, I'm glad I married her. And therefore, so now, even if it turns out years later that she is in fact an Ilonis, then the Kiddushin are still valid, because then it's obviously not Kiddushi Tos, so we can shell eye the Mishnah that way. We can say that the Mishnah is talking about that kind of case, so therefore it doesn't necessarily have to result, we don't necessarily require Roiv in order for that Mishnah to work. Even if we went like Rav Huna Breda Rishua, we could still say that you don't use Roiv when it comes to Dinin Nefashos, and yet that Mishnah could still work, because we could be talking about that no Roiv is necessary in that case. Fine. Okay, so the Gemara continues in this connection. So now, let's get back to this point. Okay, so this was all an outgrowth of this question about that we said that the Ben Sora Murda has, there's only a 3-month window during which you can be a Ben Sora Murda, because 3 months is enough time for a pregnancy to be noticeable, and then that led us into this whole discussion. But now, previously we were discussing the question whether a boy below bar mitzvah age, below shtei sairus, is actually even able to father a child. We said, we started learning on some chesam days that Rav Chista had said that yes, it is possible. However, then if that happens, then he wouldn't be able to ever become a ben sora remora, because at that point he's an av. On the other hand, we had Rabbah saying that no, that it's impossible in the first place for a child to ever father a child. So now let's talk more about that point. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Isha Hamasalela, Isha doesn't say Isha in the Mishnah. Hamasalelas b'vna katan. If a woman is rubbing against her little son, now she says Hamasalelas is Loshen Pritzus. So she's having physical contact with him, and like they're, so to speak, in a playing around way. The Haraba. Now what happens if he then does Hara, where some of his Aver touches, where his Aver touches or goes into hers? Earlier in the Masechta, we talked about two different definitions in halakha of hara. There's different opinions whether it means the initial contact of his aver with hers, or whether it means the atara, the end of the tip of the aver going in. Whatever the case, they're kind of playing around and acting in a pritzistic way, and hara was done. What does that do as far as her fitness to marry a kohen? Now, if her son was a gadol, there's no question. Obviously, that would be she'd now be a zoyna, and she's also to marry a kohen. But here, her son was a katan. B'shama says that is reason enough to passel her from marrying a kohen, or if she doesn't have children if she doesn't have living descendants to be able to go back to eat from truma from her father's house, all of this would make her passel for it. So there's no chiyuv misa, Rashi points out, because there was no hasra. They were just playing around. But nevertheless, Bes Shammai says that would be enough to make her be considered a zoyna, and now therefore she's possible to marry a kohen, and she's possible to ever eat truma. Well, Bes Hillel Machshir, and Bes Hillel says that she'd still be kosher because the child's a cotton, and therefore his bia is not considered a bia. So the Gemara points out, Amar of Chia Breid Rav Bar Nachmeni, Amar of Chista, so Rav Chia, the son of Rav Bar Nachmeni. Rav Bar Nachmeni, by the way, is regular Rabbah in Shas. So here we have his son. So here we have, he had a son named Rav Chia. So he says in the name of Rav Chista, V'amila Amar Rav Chista Amar Ze'iri. Others say that Rav Chista himself said in the name of Ze'iri the following point: Hakol Moedim Ben Teisha Shonim Yem Echad. Everybody would agree that if the boy in this scenario was 9 years old or older, should be ase bia, that his bia would be a bia. Even to the extent, in other words, that if there was hasra, the mother would actually be chayav misa. And there's no question, therefore, that either way, hasra or not, even b'shegig, she would be considered now a zoyna, and she would be also to marry a kohen. Pachas min ben shmoina, on the other hand, if the boy was less than 8 years old, Ein biyase bia, then says Rav Chia, or Rav Chista, that everybody would agree that it's not considered a bia. Lo nechlok ve'el ben shmoina. The machlokas is when he's 8 years old. So he's already reached his eighth birthday, but he's not yet 9 years old. Deves Shammai Samri gamrinen midoros harishonim. Beis Shammai says we can derive from what happened in earlier generations, whereas the Gemara is going to go on to explain over here. In earlier generations, boys were able to father children even when they were 8 years old. So Beis Shammai derives from that even for later periods, that it is possible that therefore an 8 year old's bia is already considered to be a bia. Says we don't learn from the earlier generations, and therefore, so fine, in those generations they were able to do that, but nowadays it's impossible, and therefore Bishamah says until he's 9, it's not even considered a bia. Now the Ran points out, wait a minute, I mean, how is Bishamah even thinking to learn from Dodos HaRishonim? We see that not only they were able to have bia, but they were actually able to father children. Whereas we see in later generations, and in nowadays, a boy has to be much older than that, has to be 13 in order to father children, which is why we said before that Rabbah had said that it's impossible even for a katan to father a child. So what is Beis Shammai thinking to even learn to learn from Dodos HaRishonim, where obviously they were very different? So he says, nevertheless, look, we do see that even in later generations, 9 years old is already considered a bia, that they can't father children yet, but nevertheless, it is considered a bia. So therefore, Beis Shammai says that you can learn from Dodos HaRishonim and from the earlier generations and say that that at least you can learn from them. Fine, you can't learn from them that a boy of that age can father a child, but at least that his bia should be considered a bia, that you can learn. Beis Shammai says you can't even do that. Well, the Dodos HaRishonim and Nolam Da'olid. Well, where do we see exactly that in earlier generations they were able to father children at the age of 8? Elema, are you going to say we work it out as follows? Midichtiv, so let's go through the family tree of, let's start with Bathsheba. David says when he finds out, when he first hears about Bathsheba, this is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriachiti. So we see from that that Bathsheba's father was named Eliam. Who is Eliam? Uchtiv, the Eliam ben Achitophel Agiloni, in the list of David's Giborim, you have at the end of Shmuel Beis, and in Divrei Hayamim Aleph, you have a list of the Giborim, the elite unit in David's army. And in both places, it mentions someone named Eliam, the son of Achitophel Hagiloni. Achitophel was the famous, the infamous Achitophel, the advisor of David, who afterwards went over to Avshalom's side, as we're going to discuss here in the Gemara. So the Gemara is assuming that it's the same Eliam. So therefore, it comes out that Bathsheba is a granddaughter of Achitophel. In fact, later on in the Masechta, in Perek Chelek, the Gemara explains that's one reason why Achitophel joined the revolt against David. He had a premonition that the future kings of the Jewish people are going to descend from him. So he figured that he's going to be able to worm his way into the kingship. He didn't realize that the fact is that his granddaughter Bathsheba, that her son, therefore his great grandson Shlomo, is going to be the king, and all the future generations are come from him. Some of the Forshim also point out that may also be why he had it in for David, because the way that David took Bathsheba as a wife, the whole affair over there involving Uriah and involving all of the seeming illegality of it or whatever, so Achitophel held that against David. Why'd you put my granddaughter through such a thing? Anyway, the point is, so far we see that Bathsheba is the granddaughter of Achitophel. Now, let's work out what happened happened during those years. Uchtiv, the pasuk says that so David marries Bathsheba. Their first baby, the pasuk says died. That was part of David's punishment. Then she has another baby, which is Shlomo. V'chsiv vayishlach biyad Nosan Anovi. Hashem sent a message through Nosan Anovi. Vayikra Shmo Yedidya, and he named him Yedidya. So he has a name Shlomo, but he also has a secondary name Yedidya. Ba'avurki Hashem Aheve, because Hashem loved him. The actual Lashon HaPosuk is without the key in the Aheve, which is why they're in parenthesis. The actual word in the Posuk is ki Ba'avur Hashem, because of Hashem. Fine. So we see that Shlomo is Achitophel's great grandson. Now, let's work out what happened in those years. Uchtiv. Now, you have the story in Shmuel Beis. So after the whole affair with Bathsheba, the next thing that Hashem sends through Nosan Anovi to begin with, after David had taken Bathsheba and seen to it that Uriah was killed in battle, so Nosan Anovi comes with a very harsh nevuah against David, how he can make a chilul Hashem like that. And among other things, he tells him that there's going to be several troubles and disasters that are going to happen in your family as a result of this. The first one was the story in Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Gimel, about how Amnon rapes Tamar. We touched on it earlier in the Masechta. So now the pasuk says, "Vayihi l'shnasayim yomim." 2 years later, Vayihu goes to Zimla Avshalom. Avshalom had people shearing his sheep, and he was making a party. And at that party is when he killed Amnon for what he had done to Tamar. So in other words, so far we have at least 2 years. So far we're up to at least 2 years since David had first married Bathsheba. Next, after Avshalom had killed Amnon, he runs away to Geshur, which is where actually his mother was originally from there. Earlier in the Masechta, we talked about that his mother, Macha, was actually a Yifas Toya. She was a princess, the daughter of the king of Geshur, whom David had captured in battle, and she was a Yifas Toya. And her children were Tamar and Avshalom. So now, Avshalom ran away to his maternal grandfather to Geshur, Vayisham Sholosh Shanim. He was there for 3 years. So far, we're up to 5 years. Eventually, Avshalom is brought back to Yerushalayim. It's a whole story over there in Sefer Shmuel. David didn't want to bring him back. Yoav sends someone to convince David. It's a whole long story over there anyway. Because eventually, David is reconciled. Fine, let Avshalom come back to Yerushalayim, but I don't want to see him. So the pasuk says that he was in Yerushalayim for 2 years. Vayeshev Avshalom Yerushalayim Shnasayim Yomim. He was living in Yerushalayim for 2 years. Ufnei Melech Lo Ra, and all that time he wasn't seeing the face of the king. So far we're up to 7 years since the affair of Bathsheba. After that, the pasuk describes Avshalom forces Yoav to bring him to David and reconcile with him. But then shortly after that is when Avshalom began his revolt. Uchtiv Vayimi Ketz Aboyim Shana. The pasuk says that it happened at the end of 40 years. Vayomer Avshalom al Hamelach. What's the 40 years? Elsewhere, the Gemara explains it means 40 years since the Jewish people had first asked for a king. They first asked for a king, and then you had, it took time until Shaul was appointed, and then Shaul was king for two and a half years, and then he was killed in battle, and then David's reign began. So we're talking at this point, we're like 36 or 37 years into David's reign. So that's what the pasuk means when it says 40 years. It doesn't mean 40, the 40th year of David, it means 40 years since they had first asked for a king. Anyway, the point is, so then Avshalom begins his revolt. Vayomer Avshalom al Hamelach. Avshalom says to the king, El Chana Vashalma es Nidri Hashem Adarti Lashem Mechevren. Let me go and pay my neder. Vashalim, it says in the actual pasuk. I'll pay the neder that I made to Hashem in Chevron. Keep in mind, this is before the first Beis Hamikdash was built. Bomo is so allowed. So he's allowed to bring a korban anywhere in Eretz Yisrael he wants. So he claims that he wants to go to Hebron to bring a korban over there, that he had made a promise to bring a korban to Hashem. The Gemara elsewhere explains that even he didn't actually, first of all, obviously the reason he was going to Hebron is to begin his revolt over there, rather than he can't very well begin it in Yerushalayim under the king's nose. But in addition, the Gemara also points out that why wasn't David suspicious? Why is he going to Hebron? Because in Hebron they had the best sheep available, the best quality lambs came from Hebron, or the best quality lambs came from Hebron, and therefore it seemed like a reasonable excuse that he's going to Hebron there to get those lambs, and then he's going to bring a korban there. And that's when he began his revolt. Uchtiv. Now, later on in the revolt, so you have Achitofel joins Avshalom's side, and later on he realizes as things are developing that the revolt is going to fail. So the pasuk describes over there, he gave Avshalom advice how to send a strike force to quickly eliminate David. Meanwhile, there was another guy, Hushai Ha'arki, who was secretly a friend of David and acting as a secret agent over there, and he convinces Avshalom not to do that and instead to gather the whole army to fight against David. And Achitofel realizes that this whole thing is too unwieldy and it's definitely not going to work. So the pasuk says, Achitofel raw kilo nesat sasei. Achitofel saw that what he advised did not happen, was not done. So he realizes that the whole revolt is going to fail, and then he is going to be judged as a murdered b'malchus. So he saddled up his donkey. He got up and went to his house, to his city. He gave final instructions to his family. And he strangled himself. In Bava Basra, we learned a few months ago about the instructions that he gave his family before he passed away. He told them, don't get involved in machloikas, don't rebel against Malchus Beis David. And if it's clear weather on Shavuos, then plant wheat. We talked about over there an explanation that Eva gives the deeper meaning of the three instructions that he's saying. Anyway, the point is that so at that point, Achitofel is dead. Now, so this is based on the numbers that we gave before. It comes out that Shlomo was 7 years old at the time, because again, you have Shlomo is born, then you have. Shortly after that is the whole thing with Amnon and Tamar. 2 years after that, Amnon is killed. So Amnon is killed when Shlomo is 2 years old. Then Avshalom is away in Geshur for 3 years till Shlomo is five. Then you have 2 years that he's in Yerushalayim until David is at least on the surface willing to reconcile with him. So that brings us up to seven. And Avshalom's revolt, the whole thing only lasted a few months. So therefore, so Shlomo is seven at the time when this happens. When his great-grandfather, Achitofel, dies, he's 7 years old. Now, how old was Achitofel at that time? Uchtiv, the pasuk says in Tehillim, Anshe domu mirma lo yachzu yemeim. Men of blood and of dishonesty will not live out even half their years. Now, a regular person, Yemei Shneisenu, as it says in Tehillim, a regular person's lifespan is expected to be 70 years. So Lo Yechzu Yemeim would mean that these Rishoyim don't even live to half that age, to 35. V'tanya, and we learn in a Braisa, who is David referring to? He's referring to Doeg and Achitofel, his infamous enemies. The whole length that Doeg lived was only 34 years. B'shal Achitofel, and in Elah Shloshim B'sholosh, Achitofel lived to be only 33. Now, why is that? Why do we deduct from him another year? Why do we say he didn't live to be 34 as well? The Yad Ramah points out, because the Pasuk is saying that he committed suicide, so therefore, obviously, he didn't live as much as he was supposed to. So therefore, we can assume, had he not done that, he would have lived another year, he would have lived to 34. Like this, he died at 33. So in short, so far what we have is, based on the figures, we're saying Achitofel died at age 33 and his great-grandson Shlomo was 7. So, Kama Havilahu Tlos and Tlos. So, we're saying Achitofel lived to be 33, Dal Sheva Dava Shlomo, subtract, at this point, Shlomo is 7 years old, Poshlu Esru Meshis, at this point you have 26 years left. Dal Tautishni Litlosa Iburi. Now you have to deduct. It takes time for a pregnancy. So the three pregnancies that we're dealing with, that Achitofel's wife would give birth to, would become pregnant with and give birth to Eliam, and Eliam to Bathsheba, and Eliam's wife to Bathsheba, and Bathsheba to Shlomo. So you have three pregnancies over there, and altogether you have to allow 2 years for those things. Because a baby can't be born at the very least, we're going to have, as we talked about on Amud Aleph, you can have a 7-month pregnancy, but you also need 1 month for days of Nida and Tara. So therefore, say the minimum that you're going to be able to have is the minimum that you're going to be able to have is then you have to add another 2 years. So that's Rashi points out then that you need the three pregnancies need to altogether span 2 years. Tosfos actually is a little bothered by that because at least in some of the cases that the Gemara is going to learn over here, when we're talking about Achitofel and Eliam and that whole family tree over there, we're talking about different women over there. So even if you need a month for nidus and for becoming tahor, so what? I mean, you could still have it. It's not exactly 8 months. It's 8 months and it's eight years and 1 month. So fine, Tosfos says we're not being particular on 1 month. But in any case, the Oruch Haner and other and Yad David and Mefoshim point out that really you don't need a full month for all. You need 7 days that she's tamei after the birth, and even the Gemara is going to try to bring other examples over here from generations before Matan Torah, where they didn't even have the dinim of nidus yet. So the Aruch HaNer explains, in other words, that it's not so much because the woman is usur, but because there's only certain times during the month when a woman is able to become pregnant, and that's what Rashi means over here as well. And hypothetically, the earliest could be 7 months, but in addition, you really have to add another month because statistically, you're going to have that, it's going to not necessarily, are they all getting married and having relations directly at the time when she's fertile. It might be that they have to wait a couple of weeks for her to be during her fertile period of the month. That's the Oruch HaNer explains that and is the gist of his explanation. Okay, so anyway, so we have, if we deduct 2 years to cover the three pregnancies, so we're left with 24 years. So it comes out that each of the men in this, it comes out that each of the people in this chain fathered a child when they were 8. So in other words, Achitofel would have fathered Eliam. Eliam would have been conceived when Achitofel is 8 and born a few months later when Achitofel is 9. The same thing Eliam to Bathsheba and the same thing Bathsheba to Shlomo. So each one, in other words, it comes out the conception happened when they were 8. But the Gemara, so therefore, so that could be again where Bais Shammai is learning that an 8-year-old's bia is already considered bia. But the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's the correct explanation? Maybe the two men here, we have two men and one woman involved over here. We have Achitofel Eliam, and then we have Bathsheba. So maybe the men are fathering the children only when they're 9, or Bathsheba Elidah Vashis. Maybe Bathsheba, on the other hand, could become pregnant with Shlomo, which is only 6, because you could say from the Ixabaria, because a woman is healthier and she has a greater capacity for having children. There's in fact a relevant Gemara in Nida about this, where there's a Goyish princess, the daughter of one of the Roman emperors, who asks Rebbe, and Rebbe explains to her the halachas that we're talking about over here, that 3 already bia is considered bia, and she says, it's a pity. I first got married at 6, and I had my first baby at 7. It's a pity. Based on what you're telling me, I wasted a couple of years. The Gemara says there maybe she wasn't telling the truth. Maybe a woman is not able to actually give birth at such a young age. But still, the Gemara is saying over here, maybe hypothetically, maybe we could say there is a difference in that regard between men and women. In particular, Ben Yehoyada points out that after all, the Zerah goes into the woman, so therefore maybe she has a greater capacity for it to develop inside her body more than it does for a man. So that doesn't necessarily prove that, in fact, Achitofel fathered Eliam and Eliam Bathsheba at age 8. Maybe, in fact, it was 9. So again, where is Bais Shammai's proof? Keda. In fact, you can prove that Bathsheba evidently is stronger than that. Dohavilo Vlad Meikra. After all, you have in the Pesukim over there, first she and David have a baby together, and Nosan Anovi tells David that part of your punishment for having taken Bathsheba in the seemingly improper way is that that baby is going to die, and in fact the pasuk goes on to describe that it did, that that's exactly what happened. Then she became pregnant again, and then she had a son Shlomo. So we see, even if we use the same calculation as we did before, it comes out that she was able to become pregnant at a younger age than we're talking about before. So therefore, yes, you could very well say that maybe even she's able even younger than the men in her family, and therefore that the men themselves were nine. So no solid proof from there. Fine. The Gemara says, okay, Ela Mehalcha. Fine. Let's try to prove from the following. The end of Parshas Noach. Ela told us Terach. The following are the descendants of Terach. Terach heard us of Romas Nochav Esfaron. Now the Gemara at this point is assuming that that these brothers are listed in order. So Avram is older than the Nochar, who in turn is older than Haran. Now, so therefore, Avram Godo Minachar Shana, Vinachar Godo Mehoran Shana. So Avram, we're going to assume, was a year older than Nachar, and Nachar was a year older than Haran. Again, because it takes time for the pregnancies and things in between. Fine, it doesn't mean doesn't necessarily mean a year, but at least the point is that he was older. That he was older. Nimtza Avram Godo Shtei Shana Mehoran. So it comes out that Avram is 2 years older than Haran. Now, Avram and Nachar married wives, and it says over there that Avram's wife was Sarai, and the pasuk goes on to say that that she was the daughter, that Milcah and Sarai, the two sisters, were the daughters of Haran, who was the father of Milcah and Yiska. The Lashon HaPasuk is that Shem Eshes Avram Sarai, Shem Eshes Nachar Milcah, Bas Haran, Milcah is the daughter of Haran, Avi Milcah Vavi Yiska, who was the father of Milcah and Yiska. Now, who is Yiska? V'om Rav Yitzchak, Yiska Zu Sarah. That Yiska is another name for Sarah. V'lom Nikra Shema Yiska, Shesoicha B'Ruach HaKodesh, because she was able to see and gaze with Ruach HaKodesh. She had Nevoah. She was one of the seven Nevi'ahs. Behind her sleeve, Kola Shatomei Elecha Sarah, Shema B'Kola, as we find that Hashem says to Avraham, everything that Sarah tells you, listen to her voice. So we see that she was a greater Nevi'ah than he was a Navi. In fact, the point is, because the expression Marsha points out, the diuk is from the word B'Kola, in her voice, which implies, in other words, the voice of Nevoah, that she's saying, then you should listen to it. Marshall discusses as a taka why are we saying over here a year apart when before by Achitofel and company we were saying that all you need is 8 months apart. So Marshall explains, in other words, because why taka do we need that long? Why don't we say that it's only, why don't we say it's only 7 or 8 months like we said before? But fine, the point is the Gemara doesn't assume that in these Dota sort of showing him they were always the Gemara is not going into such a level of diuk to say that to say 8 months versus a year. The point is, in other words, that we want to establish the basic point that Abraham is a couple of years older than Haran, and therefore that affects the time that we could be talking about when they had their children. To get into the level of detail, 8 months, 7 or 8 months for the pregnancy versus a year, the Gemara is not getting into that level of detail. So she's called Yiska Shaseicha Baruch Kodesh, behind the Kodesh Shatayim Elach Sarah Shema Bekodela. Dabaracha Yiska, another reason Sarah is called Yiska, Shakol Seichim B'Yafya, everybody was gazing at her beauty, because as we know from the Pesukim, she was very beautiful, and the Gemara tells us she was one of the most beautiful women who ever lived. Anyway, the point is that Sarah is the daughter of Haran. Now, by the way, we learned earlier in the Masechta that Avraham says about Sarah, he says that she's my sister from my father's side, but not from my mother's side, which according to this means she's not actually his sister, she's his niece, but sometimes a person will call his nephews and nieces, he'll call them his brother and sister, like you skip a generation, kind of. Anyway, so Sarah is the daughter of Haran. Now, how much younger was she than Avraham? When Avraham is told by Hashem that he's going to have a son, Yitzchak, he falls on his face and he laughed. And he says to himself, how is it possible that a 100-year-old man and a 90-year-old woman are going to be able to have a child? So we see that Avraham was 10 years older than Sarah. Hamakoshish Avraham Yisara Eseshnin. So we see that he was 10 years older than her. The Koshish Mavur Tarkin Shnin. Now we see, on the other hand, he was 2 years older than her father. Because we're saying that Haran was 2 years younger than Avraham. Ishtakach ki older Haran Masara Batamni older. So it comes out that he fathered her at age 8. So that would be the Shammai's proof about the Dirtus of the Shonim being able to father children at age 8. But the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's a valid proof? Dilma Avraham Zuta Da'achua Haba. Maybe Avraham was in fact the youngest of the brothers. The Derech Chochmas and Kachosh of Lehu. Maybe the Torah is not listing them in age order. Maybe it's listing them in order of their Chochmah. In fact, Rashi on the Pasuk there brings from the Medrash that Avraham was not necessarily the oldest, but he's mentioned first because he was born circumcised and because the Jewish people descend from him and so on and so forth. So therefore he's mentioned first, not necessarily to say that he was actually older than Haran. Tedan, you can prove that to Kachoshel Kra Derech Chochmasen. Here's a proof from a different group of sons of the same father, where the Torah lists them in the order of their Chochma rather than the order of their age. Dichtiv Vayhi Noach ben Chamesh Meishana. The Pasuk says that Noach was 500 years old. Vayyurled Noach Hashemes Chomves Yafes. Now, if you're going to say that it's an age order, meaning Shem Godom Echam Shana, Vacham Godom in Yefes Shana, if you're going to say then that Shem was in fact born first, and then Chom, and then Yefes, and you're going to say that that's the age order, the problem with that is Nimsa Shem Godom Yefes Shtei Shanim, it comes out then that Shem is 2 years older than Yefes. Uchtiv V'noyach Ben Sheish Meyes Shana V'amabol Hoyamayim Al Aref. Now the Mabel started when Noach is 600 years old. Uchtiv, but the pasuk says, Eila Tolus Shem, Shem ben Ma'astrana, Vayodas Apachrad. Shem was 100 years old when he fathered Apachrad, Shnasayim Achar Amabel, 2 years after the Mabel. Meaning, so what do you mean? If you're going to say that he was the oldest son, and he was born when Noach was 500, then at the time of the Mabel, Shem would already be 100 years old, and by the time it comes to Apachrad being born, 2 years later, he'd be 102. Ben Meir Shnona, Ben Meir Vatarkin Shnin Haba. And according to that calculation, he would have been 102 years old. Ela Der Chochmas and Kachosh of Lahu. Obviously, the answer is they're being listed according to their Chochma. They're being listed according to their Chochma. So therefore, Shem is listed first because he was the greatest Chocham out of all of them. So the same way, Hochanami, Derech Chochmasen, Kachosh of Lehu. The same way with Avraham and his brothers. Doesn't mean that Avraham was older than Haran by 2 years. It means that he's the greatest Chocham among them, and therefore he's listed first. So you don't really have any proof from there that in fact that Haran fathered Sarah when he was 8 years old. He might have been much older than Avraham. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Kahana, Amritza L'Shmaita Kamedir Rav Zvid Min Ahudah. So Rav Kahana says, I told over this whole discussion to Rav Zvid Min Ahudah, this whole discussion about who was older. Amali, so Rav Zvid says, by the way, Atun Mehocha Masnisu, you know, you're learning based on that logic. Joseph, by the way, wonders if they mentioned Derech Chochmasan, then Chom should be listed last. It should be listed Shem Yefes Chom, because on the face of it, Yefes was a greater Chocham than Chom, so Joseph leaves the question open. Maybe, in fact, Chom was Taka a Chocham, but he was a Chocham for bad. I don't know. In any case, so sort of Zvidmin, our job points out, after Mehocham Asnisu, so you're learning that Shem was not the eldest son from that logic, that otherwise he would have been 102 when he had Apachshad, and the Pasuk says he was only 100. We, in our Beis Medrash, we learn that from a different source. The Pasuk says, later on, when it lists the descendants of each of the sons, Shem, Chom, and Yefes, Ola Shem, Yulad, Gamhu, to Shem also children were born, Avi, Kob, and Eva, Shem being the father of all the sons of Eva, meaning all the people who live on the other side of the river, Achi, Yefes, HaGodol, the elder, the brother of Yefes, the elder one. Meaning Yefes HaGodol Shav Achiv Haya. So therefore we see from that that Yefes was the eldest of his brothers. Now, not all the Mephoshim agree with that. There are in fact different Mephoshim who parse the Pasuk differently, and they say Achi Yefes HaGodol means the elder brother of Yefes. But here the Gemara is understanding, and in fact the Trup back it up, because the word Achi has a tipcha on it, which is a separating Trup. So Achi, the brother of Yefes HaGodol, Yefes the eldest. So we see therefore that Yefes was in fact the eldest, so why then would it be listing So why would it be listing shame first? So as Vidman Adal says, there's another proof. We don't need to figure it out mathematically. We can actually see from the very words of the pasuk that that Yefes was in fact the eldest son. Fine, but we're still trying to look for a proof that in Duras or Shonim they were able to father children when they were 8 years old. So Ela Menolam, so where do we get it from after all? So we're going to do like this. Mehocha, we're going to learn it as follows. Who was the architect of the Mishkan? It was Saul ben Uri ben Chur the Mata Yehuda. So we see the family tree of Betzalel, that he was the son of Uri, who in turn was the son of Chur from Shevet Yehuda. Now, who was Chur? We had him in last week's parasha. We had him in connection with the eagle. So, Vatomas Azuva, Ashes Kolev, it doesn't actually say in the pasuk. The pasuk describes over there how Kolev had a wife named Azuva, and then Azuva passed away. Vayikach like Kolev as Ephros. Then Kolev married Ephros, which is another name for Miriam. Vatela loyas Chur, and she bore to him Chur. The Gemara actually elsewhere explains that Azuva is also a nickname for Miriam, and that Vatomas doesn't mean she actually died. It means that Azuva literally means abandoned because she was very sickly and nobody wanted to have anything to do with her except for Kalev married her and nursed her back to health, the Gemara explains in Sota. In any case, the point is that that Bchur is the son of Kalev and of Ephros, which is another name for Miriam. Now, the Ovid Betzalel Mishkan, now when Betzalel built the Mishkan, Bar Kamahavi, how old was he? Bar Tzleisar. We can show that he was 13 years old when he was the chief architect of the Mishkan. Dichtiv, Ish Mimalachter, Shahima Oisim, because the Pasuk says, each man came from the work that he would do, what he was doing. So we see that he had to have been at least 13 years old. Now, he may have been older, but in other words, at the very minimum, he had to have been 13. Vitanya. Now we learn in a Braisa, Shana Rishana also Moshe Mishkan, during the first year when they were in the desert is when Moshe made the Mishkan. They went out of Mitzrayim in Nisan of the year 2448. During the year after that, Tishrei 2449 is when Moshe gave them the instructions about building the Mishkan. They put together all the pieces of it, and the Mishkan was set up, and the Mishkan was all ready. Was already in there. They actually finished it in Chofei Kislev, and then Hashem told them to wait till the end of Adar to start dedicating it. So the first year Moshe made the Mishkan, Shnia, in the second year, Haken Mishkan, he set up the Mishkan. Then for the first time, they set up the Mishkan permanently on Aleph Nissan, the beginning of the second year, which is Mitzrayim, Veshilach Meraglim, and also the Meraglim was sent in that year. The Meraglim was sent on Chof Tes Sivan of that same year, 2449. Now, how old was Kolev at the time? Uchtiv, years later, Kolev is talking to Yeshua. He says, "When I boim shana anoichi b'shloach Moshe eved Hashem v'gomer, I was 40 years old when Moshe sent me as one of the meraglim. Va'ata hinei anoichi ayem in chomosh shmonim shana." And he says, now I'm 85 years old, which the Gemara elsewhere learns from this, that because there were 38 more years in the desert, and then it took them 7 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael, and it's at that point when they had finished conquering most of Eretz Yisrael that Kolev comes to Yeshua and reminds him of the promise that Hashem said he's going to give him the city of Hebron. So in fact, Marashah points out that's not really necessary for all Gemara. There are other Gemaras where that point is relevant about that he's 85, and we learn from that the fact that there were 7 years, that they spent 7 years conquering Eretz Yisrael. In any case, the point is that we see that Kolev was 40 when he was sent as the Meragel. Kamahavil who had Boeing. So we see he was 40 years old at that time. Dal Arbeser to have Betzalel. By that point, Betzalel is 14 because of the previous year, Betzalel had been the architect of the Mishkan. So by now already he's 14 years old. Poshalu Estrim Bashis. So that leaves 26 years, keeping in mind that Kolev again is Betzalel's great grandfather, because we're saying Kolev's son was Chur and Chur's son was Uri and Uri's son was Betzalel. Dal Tartishni de Tlosiburi. Again, you have to subtract 2 years to cover the three pregnancies, like we discussed before. So it comes out that each one of them fathered his child when he was 8. So therefore, that's a solid proof. There we can't say it's different between men and women, like we said before, with Hachitofel or anything like that. And then we can't say Derech Chochmasan. So therefore, it's clear that it really was like that. And therefore, Beis Shammai uses that as a precedent to say that even in later generations, the bia of an 8-year-old boy would be considered a bia. Whereas again, Beis Hillel disagrees and says, fine, that was all very nice in Doros and Rishonim, but in later generations, it's not like that. And therefore, only the bia of a 9-year-old would be considered a bia and would pass to his mother and so forth, like we said before. Okay. Might as well take one more minute to learn till the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, "Vein v'loy bas," that only a boy can be judged and punished as a ben sor remora, but not a girl. Tanya Reb Shimon Omer, we are Tanya Omer Reb Shimon. We learn in a brisa that Reb Shimon says, "B'din hushatei bas ru'uyah bis to ben sor remora." By rights, logically, a daughter should also be able to be like a ben sor remora. Because people are going to be involved with her in Aveira. In other words, what the whole point is, we're going to learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, that Ben Sur Ramoda is eating and drinking in a very gluttonous way. And if a girl is doing that, isn't it much more likely that people are going to come and then get involved with her and they're going to be Mizana together? So by rights, you should say the same way as a boy is going to end up being a no good Nick because of this and end up stealing and so forth. You would think the same logic should apply to a girl. But it is that it applies only to a boy and not to a girl. So that's how it is, even the logic would have told us otherwise. One interesting point about it, Ben Yehoyada makes a point. He says that the deeper idea behind it is that we Jewish people are called Hashem's son. The other nations are called Hashem's daughter. So he brings from the Kli Yoker this point of the Ben Sur Ramura. Why does the Torah tell us when the Gemara is going to point out later on? There never was and never will be a Ben Sur Ramura. Is it teaches us a lesson? It teaches us a lesson that the Yetzer Hara is telling you, do whatever you want. Don't worry. You're bonim atam Hashem aleichem. And we tell him, look, you have a case of a Ben Sur Ramura where we see that a father punishes his own son and has him executed. So realize that. So now, therefore, that keeps the Yetzer Hara at bay. So now you're going to say, though, on the other hand, continues Ben Yehoyada, the Jewish people are considered Ben. The Umas Ha'olam are considered Bas. He brings from an Al-Sheikh that says this point. So therefore, the whole concept applies only to a Ben Sur Ramura, because it's only for the sake of us Jewish people that we should take that Musa from that. It's not addressed to the Goyim in the first place, and therefore, symbolically, because of that, it doesn't apply to a girl in the first place.